The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami Maharaj on September 17, 1979 in Los Angeles, California. The class is part one.
The activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are just like an unfathomable ocean. It is not possible for me to enter into them, but simply standing on the shore, I am but touching the water. Whoever hears the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with faith, analytically studying them, attains the ecstatic riches of love of Godhead. We believe that this description of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes also holds true for the activities of Srila Prabhupada, the great Acharya, spiritual teacher and disciplic succession from Lord Chaitanya, who created the world movement of Krishna consciousness beginning in America in the 1960s. We know that just as one worships the Ganges River by an offering of Ganges water, we can glorify Srila Prabhupada only by His own mercy. Since we are His disciples, His mercy is all we are made of. We proceed then in this attempt, desiring to describe Him for the benefit of all who can hear. We have begun our research and writing with the last 12 years of His life in this world, from 1965 when He began preaching in the West through 1977. Since His personal letters from this period are the most abundant and His associates the most numerous and available, we have chosen to begin our work with these most important years. When the biography is complete, of course, it will start with His birth in Calcutta in 1896 and describe His early training under His Vaishnava Krishna conscious father, from whom He learned to worship the deity of Radha Krishna and hold the Rath Yatra festival. We shall then recount in detail His meeting in 1922 with His spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, who instructed Him to go preach in the West after His spiritual master's departure from this world in 1936. Srila Prabhupada started back to Godhead magazine in 1944 and left home in 1950 to dedicate Himself fully to His spiritual master's mission. Then He went to live in Vrindavan and took sannyas initiation in 1959. From 1960 to 1965, Srila Prabhupada stayed at the historic Radha Damodara temple in Vrindavana, where He lived in two small rooms. There He wrote and published three volumes of His translation and commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam. By correspondence, He also tried to create interest in a world movement of Krishna consciousness, although He received little response from the various gentlemen He approached. Then in 1965, just before He turned 70, an age when most devotees of Krishna are confined to Vrindavan and preparing to pass away, Srila Prabhupada took the risk of going to the West. A Mr. Agarwal in nearby Mathura had a son who agreed to sponsor Srila Prabhupada at his home in Butler, Pennsylvania for 1 month. And Sumati Maharaji, the head of the Sindhya Steamship Company, agreed to give him free round-trip passage to America on one of her cargo ships. But he had to travel without money since governmental restriction prevented him from taking money out of the country. His prospects, therefore, were full of uncertainty. He had only a month's residence in the United States. He would be living with strangers, and he had no money and no formulated plan for what to do in America. But he was thoroughly convinced of the potency of his spiritual master's instructions. The biography begins. Much as reigning queens in past ages financed explorers' voyages to the New World, So in 1965, Sumati Morarji, a pious Hindu lady and wealthy business magnate, financed a voyage from India to America by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, quote, a preacher of the Bhagavata cult, unquote. The Jaladuta is a regular cargo carrier of the Sindhya Steam Navigation Company, but there is a single passenger cabin aboard. For the voyage from Calcutta to New York in August and September of 1965, the cabin was occupied by Sri Abhoy Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami, whose age was listed as 69 and who was taken on board bearing a complimentary ticket with food. The Jaladuta, under the command of Captain Arun Pandya, whose wife was also aboard, left at 9 a.m. on Friday, August 13th. Srila Prabhupada, in the diary he kept for the ocean crossing, noted on the 13th, quote, the cabin is quite comfortable, and thanks to Lord Sri Krishna for enlightening Sumati Maharaji for all these arrangements. I am quite comfortable, unquote. But on the 14th, he reported in his diary, seasickness, dizziness, vomiting, Bay of Bengal, heavy rains, more sickness, unquote. On the 19th, when the ship arrived at Colombo, Ceylon, Srila Prabhupada was able to get relief from his seasickness. The captain took him ashore and he traveled around Colombo by car. Then the ship went on toward Cochin, a city on the west coast of India. The observance of Janmashtami, the appearance day of Lord Krishna, occurred that year on the 20th of August. Srila Prabhupada noted that he took the opportunity to speak to the crew about the philosophy of Lord Krishna and distributed prasad he had cooked himself. August 21st was his 70th birthday, observed without ceremony at sea. On August 21st, the ship arrived at Cochin, and Srila Prabhupada's trunks of Srimad Bhagavatam values, which had been shipped from Bombay, were loaded on board. By the 23rd, the ship had put out to the Red Sea, where Srila Prabhupada encountered great difficulty. He noted in his diary, quote, rain, seasickness, dizziness, headache, no appetite, vomiting, unquote. Although his diary gives no further description, Srila Prabhupada told us several times of the two strokes he experienced on this ocean crossing. 2 years later, in 1967, when he was hospitalized for a heart attack, he realized that what he had gone through on the Jaladuta on two consecutive days was a pair of heart attacks. The severe pains in his chest, he said, made him think he would die at any moment. On board the Jaladuta, Srila Prabhupada attributed the symptoms to seasickness and tolerated the difficulty meditating on the purpose of his mission. But after 2 days of such violent attacks, he thought that if another came on the third day, he would certainly not survive it. But on the night of the second day, Srila Prabhupada had a dream. Lord Krishna was rowing a boat, and he told Srila Prabhupada that he should not fear, but should come along. Srila Prabhupada felt assured of Lord Krishna's protection, and the violent attacks did not recur. The Jaladuta entered the Suez Canal on September 1st and stopped in Port Said on the 2nd. Srila Prabhupada visited the city along with the captain and reported that he liked it. By the 6th, he had recovered a little from his illness and was eating for the first time, having cooked his own khichdi and puris. He reported in his diary that his strength renewed little by little. Thursday, September 9th. This is Prabhupada's diary. To 4 o'clock this afternoon, we have crossed over the Atlantic Ocean for 24 hours. The whole day was clear and almost smooth. I am taking my food regularly and have got some strength to struggle. There is also a slight tacking of the ship, and I am feeling a slight headache also. But I am struggling in the nectarine of life. Bracket, nectarine is Srila Prabhupada's word for nectar. Is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita the source of all my vitality? The next day, Friday, September 10th. Today the ship is plying very smoothly. I feel today better. But I am feeling separation from Sri Vrindavana, the holy abode of the Lord Pastimes, and my Lord Sri Govinda Gopinath Radha Damodar. The only solace is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in which I am tasting the nectarine of Lord Chaitanya's Leela Pastimes. I have left Bharatabhumi, India, just to execute the order of Sri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati in pursuance of Lord Chaitanya's order. I have no qualification, but I have taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His Divine Grace. I depend fully on their mercy so far away from Vrindavana. During the voyage, Srila Prabhupada must have sometimes stood on the deck at the ship's rail, watching the ocean or the sky and thinking of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vrindavan Dhamma, and the order of his spiritual master to go and preach in the West. Mrs. Pandya, the captain's wife, whom Srila Prabhupada described as an intelligent and learned lady, foretold Srila Prabhupada's future. If he were to pass beyond this crisis in health, she said this would indicate the goodwill of Lord Krishna. The ocean voyage of 1965 was a calm one for the Jaladut. The captain said that in his entire career he had never seen such a calm crossing of the Atlantic. Srila Prabhupada replied that this calmness was Lord Krishna's mercy. Mrs. Pandya then asked Srila Prabhupada to come back with them so that they might have such a calm crossing again. Srila Prabhupada wrote in his diary, quote, "If the Atlantic would have shown its usual face, perhaps I would have died. But Lord Krishna has taken charge of the ship," unquote. We also know that at one point Srila Prabhupada sold the captain 3 volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. On August 13th, Srila Prabhupada wrote a Bengali poem, a prayer composed in pure devotion. He noted in his diary, quote, 32nd day of journey. Cooked bati kachori. Bati kachori. It appeared to be delicious, so I was able to take some food. Today I have disclosed my mind to my companion, Lord Sri Krishna. There is a Bengali poem made by me in this connection. Bati kachori is when a vegetable is cooked so that it starts to burn, but it's not actually burnt, it's very severely browned, and so it gives it a charcoal taste. Prabhupada in 1977 in October and June, sometimes in 1977 in the beginning when he was taking cooked food, this was his favorite preparation, bati kachori, with cauliflower and potatoes and other preps. This prayer to the lotus feet of Krishna is filled with devotional confidence in the mission Srila Prabhupada was inspired to undertake on behalf of his spiritual master. An English translation of the verses follows, quote, "I emphatically say to you, O brothers, you will obtain your good fortune when the Supreme Lord Krishna, from the Supreme Lord Krishna, only when Srimati Radharani becomes pleased with you. Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is very dear to Lord Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya, the son of Mother Sachi, is unparalleled in his service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. He is that great saintly spiritual master who bestows intense devotion to Krishna at different places throughout the world. By his strong desire, the holy name of Lord Gauranga will spread throughout all the countries of the Western world. In all the cities, towns, and villages on the earth, from all the oceans, seas, rivers, and streams, everyone will chant the holy name of Krishna. As the vast mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu conquers all directions, a flood of transcendental ecstasy will certainly cover the land when all the sinful, miserable living entities become happy, the desire of the Vaishnavas is fulfilled. Although my Guru Maharaj ordered me to accomplish this mission, I am not worthy or fit to do it. I am very fallen and insignificant. Therefore, O Lord, now I am begging for your mercy so that I may become worthy. For you are the wisest and most experienced of all. If you bestow your power by serving the Supreme Spiritual Master, by serving the Spiritual Master, one attains the absolute truth. One's life becomes successful. If that service is obtained, then one becomes happy and gets your association due to good fortune. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires, one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes following the general populace. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? A quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. O Lord Krishna, you are my eternal companion. Forgetting you, I have suffered the kicks of Maya, birth after birth. If today the chance to meet you occurs again, then I will surely be able to rejoin you. O dear friend, in your company I will experience great joy once again. In the early morning I will wander about the cow pastures and fields. Running and frolicking in the many forests of Braja, I will roll on the ground in spiritual ecstasy. Oh, when will that day be mine? Today that remembrance of you came to me in a very nice way, because I have a great longing to call to you. I am your eternal servant, and therefore I desire your association so much. Oh Lord Krishna, other than you, there is no means of success. The confidential themes of these prayers are obvious, and it is not necessary to make extended commentary on them. But since we are attempting to be with Srila Prabhupada as he lived his life, we must at least pause to appreciate such an intense, concentrated view of himself, in which he completely reveals his mind and soul in his confidential relationship with God. In this first verse, he declares that the only way one can get the mercy of Lord Krishna is to get the mercy of Srimati Radharani, who is the mercy representative of the Lord. The spiritual master is considered the representative of Radharani, and verses 2 through 7 describe the relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada gives credit to his Guru Maharaj, his spiritual master, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who foresees the day when through Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati's strong desire, the holy name of Krishna will spread through all the countries of the Western world. He plainly states that he has been ordered to accomplish this mission of worldwide Krishna consciousness. Feeling unworthy, he prays to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, asking to be empowered to engage as a servant of his spiritual master to fulfill the desires of the Lord and the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord. Certain literary critics state that a biographer should never step ahead in time to remind the reader of the great success his subject will gain, since that disturbs the reality of the time sequence. A man does not know what he will achieve until he achieves it, and the biography should capture as much as far as possible the experience of the man's life as he lived it, which was without knowledge of the future. But the anticipation in this prayer written aboard the Jaladuta was so great that we cannot help studying it, not only to appreciate what Srila Prabhupada would do, but to appreciate what he was doing already. We trust that the reader will not be disturbed as we examine these Prabhupada gems. Srila Prabhupada rarely made entries in his diary, yet from this ocean crossing we have a number of intimate revelations of his mind. With the same straightforward factual tone in which he has noted the date, the weather, and the state of his health, he has described his helpless dependence on his companion, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his absorption in the ecstasy of separation from Krishna. Srila Prabhupada rarely wrote poems. We have found a lives total of no more than about half a dozen. They were not the products of idle literary hours, nor were they written for publication or fame. The poems and diary entries were found years later by curious disciples who uncovered them among their spiritual masters' miscellaneous papers. The last two verses of this poem gave an unexpected confidential glimpse into Srila Prabhupada's direct relationship with Lord Krishna. In verse 9, he calls on Krishna as his dear friend and speaks of again experiencing the joy of wandering in the cow pastures and fields of Braja. In verse 10, he relishes how this memory of Krishna has come to him in such a nice way because of his great desire for serving Krishna. Surely the experiences related in this poem are above the mundane level. Externally, Srila Prabhupada was experiencing great inconvenience. He had been aboard ship for a full month and had suffered heart attacks and repeated seasickness. Moreover, even if he were to recover from these difficulties, his arrival in America would undoubtedly bring many more difficulties. But through this poem and through remarks in his diary, we can understand that Srila Prabhupada's consciousness was beyond all the difficulties of material duality. Nor can we say that these writings are merely idealistic discussions. With all deference to the literary critics, we will foretell here that this 70-year-old mendicant was actually to ignite the worldwide Hare Krishna explosion he predicted in this poem. And what are we to make of his remembrance of his friend Krishna wandering about in the forest of Braja? I will not be so foolish as to attempt to understand these things. As Srila Prabhupada had already written in 1961 in his Srimad Bhagavatam commentary, quote, "Spiritual feelings of happiness and intense ecstasies have no mundane comparison. Therefore, it is very difficult to give expression to such feelings. We can just have a glimpse of such ecstasy in the words of Sri Narada Muni." I can at least understand that Srila Prabhupada was thinking of Krishna and speaking intimately to Krishna, and that Krishna was reciprocating with him out of his own interest. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us that although God can certainly speak to anyone, he is selective, just like an important man in the material world who speaks only with his associates or those with whom he has some important business. To enter the association of God will be our fortune too if we can submissively appreciate the glimpses of pure devotional service given to us by Srila Prabhupada's dream of Krishna and by his prayers and diary remarks as he sailed the Atlantic to bring Krishna consciousness to America. After a 36-day journey from Calcutta, the Jaladuta reached Boston's Commonwealth Pier at 5:30 a.m. on September 17, 1965. Srila Prabhupada recalled that among the first things he saw were the letters A and P painted on a pier front warehouse. The warehouse is still there today. The ship was to stop in Boston briefly before proceeding to New York City, which was Srila Prabhupada's port of entry. Many skyscrapers have been added to the Boston skyline since 1965. But probably the same gray waterfront dawn that occurs now at that time of year was awaiting him then. And there must have been an earlier version of today's conglomeration of lobster stands. In 1965, after a short walk across the footbridge and down a few streets, you would be in a downtown section of Boston with old churches, warehouses, office buildings, bars, tawdry bookshops, nightclubs, and restaurants. We know that Srila Prabhupada went walking in the city with the captain, who did some shopping. But what is perhaps most significant about Srila Prabhupada's short stay in Boston, aside from the fact that he had now set foot in America, was that Commonwealth Pier was the place where he wrote another Bengali poem entitled Markine Bhagavata Dharma, Teaching Krishna Consciousness in America. The translation of this prayer is printed here. My dear Lord Krishna, you are so kind upon this useless soul, but I do not know why you have brought me here. Now you can do whatever you like with me, but I guess you have some business here. Otherwise, why would you bring me to this terrible place? Most of the population here is covered by the material modes of ignorance and passion. Absorbed in material life, they think themselves very happy and satisfied, and therefore they have no taste for the transcendental message of Vasudeva Krishna. I do not know how they will be able to understand it. But I know that your causeless mercy can make everything possible because you are the most expert mystic. How will they understand the mellows of devotional service? O Lord, I am simply praying for your mercy so that I will be able to convince them about your message. All living entities have come under the control of the illusory energy by your will, and therefore, if you like, by your will they can also be released from the clutches of illusion. I wish that you may deliver them. Only if you desire their deliverance will they be able to understand your message. The words of Srimad Bhagavatam are your incarnation, and if a sober person repeatedly receives it with submissive oral reception, then he will be able to understand your message. He will become liberated from the influence of the modes of ignorance and passion, and thus all inauspicious things accumulated in the core of the heart will disappear. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:17-21, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is the Paramatma Supersoul in everyone's heart and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses himself from material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. By regular attendance in classes on this Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion, ignorance, such as dust, lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. Thus established in the mood of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been delivered by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. In the stage of liberation from all material association, Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive reactions is terminated when one sees the self as master. How will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate and unqualified and am the most fallen. Therefore, I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them, for I am powerless to do so on my own. Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. O spiritual master of the worlds, I can simply repeat your message. So if you like, you can make my power of speaking suitable for their understanding. Quote, only by your causeless mercy will my words become pure. I am sure that when this transcendental message penetrates their hearts, they will certainly feel gladdened and thus become liberated from all unhappy conditions of life. O Lord, I am just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance, make me dance. O Lord, make me dance as you like. I have no devotion, nor do I have any knowledge, but I have strong faith in the holy name of Krishna. I have been designated as Bhakti Vedanta. And now, if you like, you can fulfill the real purport of Bhakti Vedanta. Signed, the most unfortunate insignificant beggar, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, on board the ship Jaladuta, Commonwealth Pier, Boston, Massachusetts, USA, dated 18th of September, 1965. These are the thoughts of one who was coming physically and spiritually from the holiest abode of Krishna consciousness into the hellishness of 20th century materialism, from Vrindavana to Boston. He could immediately see the death, suffering, illusion, the human beings reduced to animal life, as materialists could never see them. Yet he did not turn away in loathing. He had come to save these people now, but now he felt very weak and lowly, unable to do anything on his own. He stood in the American city, a city rich with billions, populated with millions, and determined to stay the way it was. He was but an insignificant beggar with no money, an old man who had barely survived two heart attacks at sea, who spoke a different language, and who was dressed strangely. Yet he had come to tell people to give up meat-eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and to worship Krishna, who to them was an unknown Hindu god. What would he be able to accomplish? But while feeling his own weakness, he directly spoke his heart to God. He was alone with no friend, but God was his friend. And what did he wish of his friend? Quote, I wish that you may deliver them. I am seeking your benediction so that I can convince them. And in this intimate poem, he also revealed the method he would use. He would trust in the power of the transcendental vibration of the God of God's holy name, as expressed in the verses he quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. The message of Godhead itself would clean away desire for material enjoyment and create loving service unto Krishna as an irrevocable fact. It was complete faith in this process that he expressed, even while forced to feel the powerful influence of ignorance and passion that dominated everyone around him in the American city. He was tiny, but God was the greatest, and God was Krishna, his dearmost friend. Therefore, although no one in Boston or New York had the slightest suspicion of it, and although he himself did not assume it, he had entered as a powerful enemy of illusion. Krishna's empowered emissary had entered the shore of America in the form of a poor mendicant from India, and no one yet knew what it all meant. As for Srila Prabhupada's understanding of the event, he expressed it in his poem. Quote, "Somehow or other, O Lord, you have brought me here to speak about you. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like." That is the story of how Srila Prabhupada left India, Vrindavan Dham, and traversed on the Jaladut ship to America. Actually, Srila Prabhupada's poems, his prayers, reveal what the mood of a devotee should be to his spiritual master, to Krishna, to Radharani, to the order of his spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was under the protection of Krishna and Krishna's Yogamaya, Subhadra Devi, Radharani, he predicted while out at sea how the whole world, every town and village, from every river, every sea, everywhere, the holy name of Krishna would resound. Prabhupada was acting as the perfect instrument in the hand of his spiritual master, in the hands of Krishna. I remember how Srila Prabhupada would hear the feats of certain mystic yogis and babas who could perform so-called miracles by producing a rasagula or a sweetmeat or a sandesh or some kind of wristwatch for his devotees. This was called a miracle. Many followers came, poured money, and begged the mystic yogi for a blessing so their business would prosper. So Srila Prabhupada would say how you should tell them the real miracle is how from 40 rupees, 400 million rupees of international preaching has been achieved. How from nothing, how so many devotees have been enlivened. Have these people changed one person's heart? Srila Prabhupada, he has moved the hearts of countless people. So here we see the dedication that Srila Prabhupada had. Actually, Srila Prabhupada tried to cooperate in different ways with his god brothers, but they were busy in their own affairs. They were not so fortunate as our ISKCON movement, which is so tightly knit. there had been dissension between some. But in spite of being all alone, Srila Prabhupada never felt himself alone because he had his spiritual master in Krishna, his order. He didn't leave a stone unturned. It's not that Srila Prabhupada went off on his own. Actually, there are so many instances where he asked to be sent as the representative of the Gaudiya mission, where he tried to work hand in hand with the Gaudiya mission, but theirs was not the same mood of preaching that Srila Prabhupada had learned from his spiritual master. And they were all broken into factions. There was no cooperation. Bhaktisiddhanta had ordered that there should be a governing body commission, and all the disciples should surrender to it to keep the mission together, 64 temples. But they didn't obey him. So Prabhupada, after many, many years, he was faced with the grim future that all my god brothers, who he considered in his humility, they are so much senior to me, but they have not yet done anything. So although I am insignificant, anyway, I must try to do. Other god brothers have gone to Europe, they have gone to England, but they have not done anything. So America is the richest nation. So let me go to America, where no one has yet tried. Let me shoot the rhinoceros at the age of 69, 70. That is no small feat, aboard an Indian cargo vessel without any money. Srila Prabhupada said that had any of my disciples had to go under those conditions, they would not have been able to maintain their Krishna consciousness. Without implicit faith in the order of the spiritual master and the words of the scriptures, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the purport of the Vedas is not revealed. And by such implicit faith, all the secrets of the Vedas are revealed. So Srila Prabhupada, he had such implicit faith, so everything was revealed. Before stepping off the ship, he said everything. How these people are situated and how they'll be delivered. So, I only met, although I met Srila Prabhupada's devotees in 1967, I only met Srila Prabhupada personally in 1968 in Montreal. At that time there was already three temples, one in New York, one in San Francisco, and one in Montreal. There was talk about opening a center in Los Angeles. Umapati or someone had come here to check out a few places. And he said there's a good prospect for a temple in Los Angeles. People here were favorable to such a move. So I can't say from any personal experience before that time what happened. Of course, we have all heard, even before the biography, we've heard many things from Srila Prabhupada himself and from his letters and other devotees. how sometimes his effects were stolen, how sometimes he was beaten, how sometimes he was intimidated, how sometimes he was befriended, how sometimes he was favored, how sometimes he was neglected, how sometimes he felt frustrated that the progress was going on too slow. But if Srila Prabhupada didn't have that patience, there were so many followers of Bhakti Siddhanta, there were so many Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there are so many Vaishnavas, there are so many Sanatan Dharmis and Hindus. But had Srila Prabhupada had that one saintly transcendental citizen of India not come to this land to preach this Krishna conscious movement, then we shudder to think what should have been our fate today. Lost in this dark pit of this material world, without a glimmer of hope, just like the multimillionaire standing outside his house, Bhavananda Goswami and Achyutananda Swami, I don't may have the name incorrect, the Hollywood Hills or something, yesterday were caught on fire. And they were watching the big houses, one after another, big 100-foot flames going up. It was a big event. And the rich people, they're standing with their hose trying to keep the roof wet. Flame just devours the house. So like that, we are thinking, oh, I will solve all my problems. I have so many plans. But we would have simply been devoured by the fire of this material world, which is still waiting to devour us any time we turn our face away from Krishna. But there actually was no hope. Srila Prabhupada has given us our lives. His devotees are preaching and still giving us and so many others their lives. So this is Srila Prabhupada's gift. If we are to weigh his gift to us, then how can we repay it? Just like Krishna was asking his devotees to weigh him, and so they are putting so many gold objects, but no matter how much gold he put, he was much heavier. So finally, they got the secret. They put on a tulsi leaf the word Krishna, the name Krishna, and they put that on the scale and that tulsi. That one cannot repay Krishna, the spiritual master, by any amount of gold or material things alone. One has to give, just like Krishna and his name are not different, so Krishna plus Tulsi was heavier than Krishna. So we have to give everything, thought, word, deed, everything to Krishna. Plus what? What else is there? You see. So therefore, even we give everything, we still can't match. So therefore, we become hopeless. How to repay the debt? But Srila Prabhupada is so kind that he has revealed the secret debt. There's no way to repay the debt. Even at one time, if one syllable of the word Krishna is given or taught to someone, their debt is so great that no amount of service, of material repayment, could ever repay that debt. So simply we have to be satisfied with the attempt to repay. There are so many great people honored in history, just like the crossing of the Potomac by George Washington and the two lights, one if by day and two if by land and two if by sea, all these things. These are commemorated, you see. The landing of the troops in certain... Already people are forgetting. And they have significance in one nation and one place. But don't think that Srila Prabhupada setting foot in America has only significance to the Americans. But rather, this has had significance and has significance to everyone throughout the whole world. In Europe, in Africa, in Australia, in South America, in North America, in India, Asia, everywhere. See, Prabhupada has started the avalanche. Have you ever seen an avalanche? An avalanche starts in a small way. Sometimes one little bit of snow or dirt will just start to roll. And as it's rolling, it hits other pieces, and they also start to move. And the subsequent movement becomes bigger and bigger. And from a small particle to hundreds of particles to thousands of particles to a few tons of material, it starts to roll and gain momentum. In this way, as the avalanche gains its speed, then finally the whole mountain crashes down in a huge landslide. Jai Sisi Rukmini Dorkadish. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada has started the flood of love of Godhead. He has started the, and he is nurturing, he is nourishing. Simply, we are pebbles. We are insignificant particles of dust, simply taking part in this massive landslide, which will completely free all the loose particles from the fixed-up position, this material world, down, down into the ocean of bliss, the ocean of transcendental love of Godhead waiting below, avalanche into the sea of Krishna consciousness. So this is a very historic day, today and tomorrow. We should remind ourselves and commit ourselves to dedicate to the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga, following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, to spread this message which he has brought with such care and affection and compassion, so that everyone can benefit. That is the service we can do to offer to Srila Prabhupada? Thank you. Are there any questions or topics of discussion? Maybe someone can bring up some nice points. Yes?
You said she would follow up with some monks in America preaching. So later he sent some of his disciples back from India. And practically they were by themselves preaching. I know you were one of them. So perhaps you could say something about that. What was it like alone preaching in a foreign country?
Wasn't so much alone. Because 2 months, of course, Achyutananda was there for 1 year alone. And then after I came, after 2 months, Srila Prabhupada visited India. And every year Prabhupada would come at least one time to India. Although we were alone for the first 4 or 5 years, one can't draw so much of a comparison. He was physically guiding us and training us, telling us what to do, criticizing us when we did something imperfectly. The trial of Srila Prabhupada, when he was asked to leave America in 1968, that time he went to Canada. At that time I left San Francisco after Rath Yatra and went to Montreal to meet Srila Prabhupada, because I heard he was going back to India and he may never return. I thought I'd been looking for years and years for some one person who had some spiritual wisdom. And here I find so many enlivened devotees now their spiritual master, the great master who has come to India with this message, he's going back. I may never meet him. So they tried to tell me, the temple president, well, you should just stay here. Don't leave the temple. Don't worry. You won't understand what Srila Prabhupada says anyway. He speaks with an Indian accent. So I was very confused, being a new bhakta, what to do. So someone took me aside, listen, don't believe these guys. You just ask him that if you pay his way, would he like to go to see Srila Prabhupada? And you'll find out the real truth. So then I could understand that he just wanted to keep another brahmachari in the temple. And sure enough, he would also like to go to see Srila Prabhupada. So then I went to see Srila Prabhupada to surrender personally at his lotus feet. And in those days we didn't have any Sankirtan. We didn't have any big book distribution. We'd print up, we'd get a few back to Godheads from New York and then think about how to give them out to anybody who wanted them. And pretty soon they were even printing a few thousand copies. But it was not really that our movement was based on book distribution. So that time, all the devotees in America were signing a petition to get Prabhupada a permanent visa status. And there was no money in the temple. So when I came, I had to work in a factory. I had a job in an A&W coffee shop cleaning up after the people, because Prabhupada was going to be evicted from his house. I was sweeping the floor. And the people used to curse me, why I would sing while I swept. They said, you're the lowest man on earth. This is the worst job in the world. You're supposed to be miserable while you're always singing and smiling. And every night I would go to hear Srila Prabhupada lecture every morning. So after that kind of experiences, working in a welding shop and all those different things, I was a student at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. I was going to prep schools. I never really had to work like that before. After that, going to India wasn't so bad. For 6 months, we were working on manpower, anything we could do just to get, because we had to maintain Prabhupada's apartment and the temple. And there was no book distribution. There was no real program developed yet. That all came after about 2-3 months after we started to gradually develop different programs. But in those days, all we could do was kirtan on the street and beg or get jobs. So then after that, we were doing Sankirtan. I remember in Toronto, $400 a day was a big pick for 20 devotees. That was wonderful. Big festival. It was a big shock when I was asked to go to India, because no one, it was like if you ask somebody, please line up at the corner and the moon god's going to come and take you to the moon, you're going to preach there. No one ever went to India. Wasn't ever thought, it wasn't a place to go to. But actually, if one is sent on some assignment where he is forced to remember the spiritual master and depend on him in his heart, then one has to, it's like being thrown in the water. One has to either sink or swim. There's no alternative. One has to either grip at the lotus feet of the spiritual master very tightly, because he knows that apart from that, apart from his instructions, apart from following his orders and remembering his words, that apart from that, there's no other protection. Maya will immediately snatch one up. Maya seems very prominent all around. Actually, you see, Prabhupada, we could see in his biography, he was looking for a service. He was looking where he could get his in. For 2 years, he was going here and there and here and there, trying to find a way to give the people Krishna consciousness. He had the goods, but how to merchandise it, how to give it to them, how to find out where the market was, where the people were who would accept this transcendental commodity. That is a tremendous, frustrating thing. As soon as I arrived in India, the Prabhupada gave me so much service. I had never had a time to think about, you see, what to do. That service was provided immediately. You had to get a temple. You had to. It had already been trained. When I was here in the United States and Canada, we were told that the duty of every devotee is to open a temple. Some people even said the best way to open a temple is first you have to get married. The husband-wife team are the most effective. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to see Hansaduda Maharaj Gurudev. At one time, he was very much insistent that was a very positive course for me. I became very, very much disturbed that I was being intimidated. Here I was a new bhakta and newly initiated devotee, and all of a sudden, I had to give up my brahmachari life. That I went and approached Prabhupada, that what should I do, Srila Prabhupada? Yes. Whatever you tell me, I will do. He said, well, what do you want to do? No, he didn't tell me that. He said he asked my age at the time. He told me, when you are 25 years old, then, according to the Vedic custom, the spiritual master decides what is best for you. To either remain a brahmachari, take sannyas, or get married. So right now, you simply wait, and I will decide at the right time what you should do. You don't listen to anyone else, you simply wait for my order. So I got freed from that particular danger. And then we were told, though, that we had to learn to cook, to do pujari work. We had to know how to do accounts.
manage the temple, play a madranga, play kartal, and preach from the Gita and the Bhagavad. And that was the way we used to be trained in those days. Now, like people specialize in sankirtan, cook, pujari. In fact, when I took over as president of the Mantial Temple, there was only four devotees. I was the pujari, the cook, the president, the accountant, and the sankirtan leader. And then I had to gradually train everyone else how to cook, how to do the pujari, because when the previous temple president left, he took everyone with him to open up a new temple somewhere else. So nowadays, of course, when we go to open up a temple, then there'll be one president will go, one cook will go, about three, four men will go. Those days, we were trained that one man, two men can go anywhere. With that, the same way I went and opened up a temple in Toronto. Immediately start cooking prasadam, invite some people over, give them prasad. So that way I was prepared to go anywhere. That was, we were told that your duty is anywhere that you'll be sent, you have to go and open a temple. This is how you have to be prepared to satisfy your spiritual master. After many years, Prabhupada said, first of all, let's get the temples we have very strong and established before we just go on expanding. So now the mood is a little bit different. So Srila Prabhupada, I remember how we used to always be thinking so deeply how to train everyone to accept responsibility for Krishna consciousness. It's simply a question of how responsible one is to the orders of the spiritual master. How responsible and how straightforward. There can't be any duplicitousness before one's spiritual master. I remember we used to go before Srila Prabhupada, and I would sometimes say, Srila Prabhupada, I am a great fool. And Prabhupada said, very good. You should always remain a fool before your spiritual master. As soon as you think you are not a fool before your spiritual master, then you are a first-class fool. Then you are doomed. You should simply keep your mind open like a slate so the spiritual master can write on it. So, Srila Prabhupada, he is so kind. He had so many ideas for spreading Krishna consciousness. He would say that, I have so many ideas, but I cannot reveal to you now. I cannot reveal. Because you are not yet ready to hear all my ideas. I will reveal one after another as you are able to see. When Srila Prabhupada left this world, he said, I have finished half of my work. Yet half remains to be done. So, Srila Prabhupada, he is so kind, he has given us so much service to do. Of course, there are so many areas. Each area is a new experience, a new exploration. But the foundation which he has left is so strong, it is so wonderful, that it is a tremendous impetus, a tremendous gift, making it so easy for us to expand. Simply a little hard work, a little bit of elbow grease and deep concentration. He said that if you cannot expand what I have done, if you cannot increase it, if you cannot make it bigger and better, which is my innermost desire, then at least maintain it. Don't let anything deteriorate. Of course, Srila Prabhupada wanted us to double our book distribution. He wanted us to increase the preaching more and more. Sometimes, when we gave the proposal we're going to build a 250, 350, 400-foot temple in Mayapur, then the local people would complain that Lord Chaitanya's temple is only 140, 150. How can you build something bigger? And Prabhupada would say that a rich man, he wants his son, should become a wealthier man. Why does a man who's working in a job, he's saving all his money to send his son to school? Because he wants that his own son should be more successful. I remember sometimes some devotee was saying, Prabhupada, what about those good old days when we were struggling? He said, what about, these are the good old days. Those days are unmentionable. When all the devotees are chanting their 16 rounds, attending their Bhagavatam class, fully engaged in their service, those are good days. When one is simply struggling to create a program to enlist not very enthusiastic or willing people, those are the struggling days. So Prabhupada has taken that burden on himself. He has undergone all those struggles. After that, any subsequent struggles, don't compare at all. Actually, the more that one feels heavy pressure in service, although at the time it may feel very difficult, later on, if the pressure lifts a little bit, then one actually feels little separation from that intensity. But at that time, I had a more intense appreciation of devotional service. I was brought closer to Krishna and to my spiritual master in Krishna. Just like Kunti Devi, she prayed that let there be danger rather than there be good fortune, because by danger I am calling on Krishna and Krishna is coming to me. So, of course, we hope one day our god brothers or disciples or grand disciples or their grand disciples and grand nephews and everything will have a whole Krishna conscious world to practice their devotional service in. But of course, this struggle is a great opportunity for us to surrender, who have been born in a sinful situation, so that in the future the children and the descendants in the cyclic succession, they will be born in a Krishna conscious situation, so that it's definitely everyone's last birth in this material world. They'll go right back to Krishna. Well, this is our great opportunity. We can, all of us, we are actually all of us alone in one sense, that apart from our spiritual masters, Orda and Krishna, there's nothing else. Of course, we have our god brothers. They give us reinforcement. They give us association. So we can thank Prabhupada how kind he was. Had he not given us this association, had he not made this society, where would we be without our God brothers and God sisters? Without all these devotees to give us association, how much more difficult, how much more of a trial it would have been. In India, there was such a turnover of devotees. No one could stay. Prabhupada was always in anxiety. I have no credit. Only thing is, I just stuck it out. But that was simply by Prabhupada's mercy. The real dynamic force, of course, we see present and advanced devotees like Sri Rameshwar Swami, who is fighting constantly against the demons who are opposing this book distribution, who are opposing this preaching. All over the movement we see so many preachers who are daily encountering so many obstacles, but who are remaining fired up, who are remaining enthused, and who are preaching. So if we can refine that and try to follow in the footsteps, try to capture what is the mood, what is the vibration of Srila Prabhupada when he surrendered everything to spread Krishna consciousness. That will be our greatest achievement. If we can capture that fire from the pure devotees and ignite our own wood-like heart, coal-like heart, and then keep the fanning on that fire so it burns strong and consistently. That is the greatest and most secret confidential thing we can get from our spiritual master. Their mood, their vibration, their intense feeling and desire to satisfy Krishna. And they're, and first and foremost, their own spiritual master. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paraman Sabrazakshar Jai Sutaya Zarasi Sivad Sila Vaita Naravinda Vakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Sila Prabhupada Ki Sila Prabhupada Ki.
Prabhupada was so satisfied. The biggest street in America, Fifth Avenue, and a beautiful Rath Yatra, three big carts built personally by Jayananda Prabhu, even though during the time he was constructing the carts, he was already showing signs of the disease that would ultimately take his body. He still went on building the carts and personally pulled the Jagannath cart. So Prabhupada was feeling great ecstasy at that time. And also, it was a beautiful season of the year in America. The Gita Nagari farm was just coming up. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj and myself were pleading with Srila Prabhupada, why travel back to India again? Of course, Bombay wasn't open, and that was on Prabhupada's mind, that I have to go to India and push the construction. And we were trying to tell Prabhupada, why not let others manage, so you can be given some relief and you could just stay for another month or so at the Gita Nagari farm. It's very peaceful and your health will be so nice. The milk, we were describing to Prabhupada about the milk from those cows and everything. And his health was very bad at that time. So anyway, we were pleading with him day after day, even up until the last second, we were going down from the 11th floor in the elevator to the car to the airport. We were still pleading with him, please don't leave. Finally, Prabhupada ended the discussion by turning to us in a way that is only Prabhupada could look in this way, completely majestic, like some beyond the demigod, beyond the king, just so much beauty and majesty and nobility. So he turned to us and he said to us, I want the bliss of fighting for Krishna up until my last breath. And the combination of the tone in his voice and the way he was majestically standing there in the elevator going down ended the conversation once and for all. There was no question of deterring Srila Prabhupada. He was determined. He said, I want to follow in the footsteps of Arjuna. I want to give my whole life to Krishna. Up until my last breath, there is no question of resting. That was Prabhupada's style. He used to joke with us, work now, samadhi later. That was his joke. So, the sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters of His Divine Grace should understand their father or grandfather. The mercy of the spiritual master is available to those who catch up the spirit of his life and follow in his footsteps. He is like a rain cloud which has got unlimited quantity of water. There is no limit to the mercy of Krishna, which we can all receive from Srila Prabhupada. There's no limit. But there is a process for receiving that mercy. We must study the Acharya, not only by his words, but he is the living example. We must study the spirit of his working, the spirit of how he engaged himself and dovetailed himself 24 hours a day. And we are instructed by the greatest authority of Vedic knowledge, Srila Rupa Goswami, that if you want the mercy of Krishna, then you must follow the footsteps of the predecessor Acharya. Therefore, every single move that Srila Prabhupada made was calculated to teach us how to be Krishna conscious. Nothing in his life was whimsical. The way he pushed himself from one country to another, the way he accepted any material difficulty for his Guru Maharaj, the way he never stopped preaching and fighting for Krishna up until the last breath of his life. Every one of these moves is calculated to teach us how to get the mercy of Krishna. The fact is that Srila Prabhupada did not have to translate on his disappearance bed. There were so many things he did not have to do, but every single move was calculated to teach us the spirit of total surrender to Krishna. That's where one finds pure love for Krishna. That is where one finds the highest state of bliss. But we should never forget the style of Srila Prabhupada. Rather, we should try to mold our lives around his style. He was famous for telling us, if you are going out to hunt, you might as well try to shoot a rhinoceros. Don't go after a little rabbit. Don't think small for Krishna. Think big. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada would order us to build big temples in India when we only had about 20 devotees living in India. In different cities, simultaneously, money would be sent for construction, and there were no devotees, and still Prabhupada was building temples. We have to study Srila Prabhupada's transcendental mood for spreading Krishna consciousness. He was bold. He was the greatest warrior. He was the most encouraging personality. He had the biggest plan, just like with our library party. Practically from the day it started, Prabhupada was asking, how many libraries are there in this planet? And then we said, well, Prabhupada, there's a few thousand college libraries. He said, no. How many branches are there? How many high schools are there? How many public schools are there? Every single thing that he did was on a gigantic scale. Anyway, there are so many lessons to be learned from Srila Prabhupada's life. We should learn those lessons. He lived in a particular way, not because it is his nature. We should not misunderstand this point. As a perfect acharya, he deliberately lived and acted and planned and pushed himself in a way that he wanted us to live and act and plan and push ourselves. We should understand that Srila Prabhupada is beyond the modes of nature. It's not that he was acting in this way because that's his nature, and we can act in a different way because that's our material nature. As the acharya, he taught how we should live. So, just like his going away from his home, crossing these seas, going to a foreign country alone, no money, just with faith in Krishna. So there are many things that we have to learn. And as we build up our spiritual consciousness, then more and more, if we want to make advancement, we have to be molding our life around the example of Srila Prabhupada. That is the way for all of us to become fully Krishna conscious. His teachings are relevant. His lifestyle is relevant. So we should try and catch up the spirit of Srila Prabhupada, his missionary spirit, his spirit of surrender and devotion. In this way, our lives can become successful. So, Srila Acharya, on this occasion, you may like to conclude this morning program with a few words. You had so much intimate association with Srila Prabhupada, especially in India. You know better than any of us how he pushed himself and his disciples.